You sounded a little under the weather.
A little bit.
This morning. Why don't you bring me up to speed? What's going on? What am I looking at here?
Yeah.
This is like a hippie's medicine cabinet. This is
Jordan's basic moment of the week.
This might be a recurring segment. Just because this is some basic bitch shit here. What am I looking at?
Yeah, we should start a hashtag for that.
Oh, man.
So I woke up a little congested, a little stuffy. We're in the middle of the open right now. 2 weeks down, 3 to go.
Okay.
We'll
get to that, but we'll this is that. Like peak level crunchy organic shit I'm looking at here.
So I woke up, I got, you gotta keep that 30 pack of emergency just in case. So I grabbed about 5 of those.
Potential sponsorship opportunity.
Yeah, there emergency.
Shout us out.
Lamest sponsor of all time.
Oh my god. there goes our opportunity.
Yeah. So I grabbed a bunch of those, grabbed a handful of vitamins.
Okay.
Went to Whole Foods. You know, I got to get my coffee in the morning. Picked up some, I don't even know what this is. Yeah, just, it looked healthy. Some beet, orange, and carrot juice blend. That's, be careful, that's like a $6 bottle of juice.
Yeah, well, I saw the Whole Foods thing.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Good thing you got your 15 grams of sugar in there. That's a must.
Sugar, that's great for the metabolism.
And then what am I looking at? What am I looking at here?
That's just branched chain aminos and some creatine.
And the ice concoction you have next to it?
Coffee. That's coffee. All right. And then I have, in the fridge, a crate of berries. Got to get my antioxidants.
Okay, sure.
And we got my lemon ginger kombucha.
Yikes.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Pulling out all the stops here.
Yeah, he's going to put on Sanox later and go for a hike. Fucking hippie. What the hell? This isn't bad. I mean, it's just orange juice, carrot juice, and beet juice.
Yeah, a couple of vitamins.
I don't know why the fuck you had to pay $6. You could probably have just...
Because it looks like human carrots. Blood.
That's yeah, well, there is a... It's almost... Is it thick? It looks thick.
Yeah. I think there's human blood in there.
All right, then. Wow. All right.
Don't put that in the sun. It's going to oxidize.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus.
Oh, my God. Well, that concludes this week's Jordan Junta's Basic Bitch Moment of the Week.
Yeah.
So 17.2 got you a little rundown. What was the workout?
Yeah, so the workout... This one's just hard for me to even explain, so even harder to do. Okay. But it starts off with 2 rounds. You start with 50-pound dumbbells... In the front rack position.
Okay.
You do a 25-foot
line. So a 50-pound dumbbell in each hand.
Yes. So 100 pounds total, two 50-pound dumbbells.
I gotcha.
You do a 25-foot lunge down, 25-foot lunge back. So 50-foot lunge. Hop up. You do 16 toes to bar. So toes touch the bar.
Yeah.
on a pull-up bar. And then you do 8 power cleans with the dumbbells, which is... Basically, a bicep curl that the dumbbell touches the ground every single time.
So, like a hammer curl starting from the floor.
Yeah.
All right.
Exactly.
For all my bros out there.
Yeah. So, you go through 2 rounds of that.
Fucking brutal.
And then you go through 2 rounds, very similar. You do the lunge. You come back, except instead of toes to bar, it's 16 bar muscle-ups.
Oh, shit.
So, you start below the bar.
Yeah.
And on top of the bar.
Do the whole thing.
Do those, 8... Hammer curls from the floor.
Hammer curls from the floor.
It's 2 rounds of that, then you go... It's alternating.
Yeah.
So you go back to the 2 rounds of toes bar after.
Okay. And how many... You got to get 2 rounds of each?
Oh, it's a 12-minute AMRAP.
Okay.
So AMRAP, as many reps as possible in 12 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now how'd you fare? How'd you finish in NorCal?
I did pretty well. I got the 14th or 15th spot in NorCal.
Yeah, shit.
I got 207 reps, which is... 6 full rounds, so I did the 2 rounds toes to bar, 2 rounds muscle ups, 2 rounds toes to bar, and then I got 3 lunges.
To contrast, that is more reps than I've completed in the last like 3 weeks of my honestly, probably more like including warm ups. That is more reps than I've done probably in like a solid month, my last month of training.
Yeah, I think your reps are a lot more meaningful though. These are I'm curling 50 pounds from the floor.
I miss bicep curls. So I got in shit. My coach gave me shit the other day because I was like doing stuff that wasn't squat, bench, or deadlift. He's like, no, it's nothing else matters.
Yeah, don't fuck.
Like
with
literally,
that.
One of my workouts was like just squat until you can't. Like work up to a top double and that's it. Took me 3.5 hours to do.
I mean, I believe that.
And how long did this take? 207 reps? Is it 12 minute time?
12 minutes. It took me 12 minutes. Yeah.
And then you're done for the rest of the day.
Yeah, well, I mean, I did some strength stuff. I got to try and get strong like you or like a fraction of you. But speaking of, you're, what, 2 weeks out now?
No, less, dude. I fly out, well, 1.5.
One and a half
It's Thursday in Australia right now. We're recording this. It's the 8th of March. I compete the 18th, but in Australia, so I lose a day to travel, so it's really like it's the 9th of March in Australia, so it's,
so 9 days?
9 days. Wow. I fly out on Monday, land Wednesday, compete Saturday.
So you had, was it your last squat session last night? Second to last?
That's the thing, all the guys I'm competing against are like pretty much packing it in, and I have two squats. I have a bench tonight, and I have triples at 295 on Thursday, and then doubles 325, 330.
So this is squats?
Squats.
In kilograms.
Kilograms, yes. Okay. Like the rest of the fucking world.
So my brain works within numbers that are realistic for myself.
Okay, so let's...
So when you say, like, up to 200, I can understand, like 440 pounds.
Yeah.
All right. After that, I'm like, there's no fucking reason for me to even know what this is because I'll never lift this much weight.
So
for the layman.
For the lay American
man.
So 295 for a triple is going to be... So Thursday night's workout will be 650 on squats for a triple.
Okay. Holy shit.
On Sunday, if the plan is 330, it's 726.
726
pounds
for two squats.
That's consecutive. That's the plan.
Wow.
I doubled. What was my last double? 325 the other day. It wasn't on Instagram, so people are going to think I'm lying. So I doubled 715. So I'm looking to double close to 730. So hopefully, realistically, that'll be like, if it goes well, like second attempt. Maybe like a little heavier on a second attempt and just YOLO on the third.
Yeah.
I'd want that. That would be nice. Because that'll be like the lightest. I mean, my body weight's been coming down, but that'll be like the lightest I've been with that much weight on. Well, that'd be the most I've ever had on my back.
Yeah.
And last I competed, I was a little heavier because I had the 24-hour weigh-in. But yeah, that'll be interesting. We'll see how it goes.
Wow.
So if I'm dead by the time this gets put out, you'll know why. All right. Okay, so that's us caught up on the workout side of things.
Yeah.
Our boy Jin, let's get this out of the way from the get-go.
Absolutely.
Engine Fitness, if you need anything.
Yeah, Jin's equipment, bars, weights, bumper plates, dumbbells, rigs, racks, benches, all the above.
Shaker cups,
t-shirts, jock straps.
Yeah, even just like a just a friendly face.
Yeah, Jin, a hug. Jin's, he gives you great hugs.
Service with a smile, Engine Fitness.
Yeah, yeah. So check out Engine Fitness.
Lundo, guys. Kyle, Lunderjack Productions.
Yes, sir.
Some of his artists are actually just released an EP.
Oh yeah,
I'm pretty sure it was good. Chicks the harmony, man. I tell you what, she's got some pipes. And if Lundy can make us sound good, imagine what people who actually sound good sound like.
Wow, it's incredible.
One honorable mention I want to shout out real
quick. B-Money Lifts.
Is it B-Money Lifts?
I think it's
B-Money Lifts. There it is. Good. So, Brandon Mahoney. Big shout out. Brandon Mahoney. So he's been pumping us up. Appreciate that. 5-star rating. Let's not have Brandon be lonely up there on iTunes. So get out there. Write something, even if it's just the word something. I'll shout you out.
Something in 5 stars.
Five stars and just write something, and you'll get an honorable mention the next episode. Okay. Episode 12. Unbelievable.
We're talking about what is in our gym bags.
What's in your bag? Let's start with belts, because that's most contentious because it's most popular.
Right. Everyone's got a belt.
Yeah.
They might not know why or when to use it, but they got it.
Exactly. Right? I mean, it's sort of like a bro science evolution. A bigger dude had one. I'm going to get one. Yeah, I'll be a bigger dude. So
I think we're going to have a pretty good difference of opinion on this one, to be honest.
Because you got a couple floating around in the gym bag, right?
Yeah. I have two different belts. A lot of CrossFitters will have two, maybe three different belts for different purposes. The two that I have... Basically, one is more for powerlifting, one is more for weightlifting.
So one's like tapered in the front, one's kind of like a full...
One is 4 inches all the way around. Yeah. That would be my powerlifting belt. Right. Historically, I used to, until I got the tapered belt, I would use that for squat and deadlift only.
Okay.
Now I use it for deadlift only just because the tapered belt is a little more comfortable for me. I'll use the tapered belt for squatting... And for clean and jerking, over about 90%.
90?
Yeah. So that's a lot of people, they'll just, you know, this is the thing that I think we're going to have a difference of opinion on, but it's for a good reason because we're lifting for different purposes a lot of the time, is the belt, they will just grab it every time.
Yeah.
Like, I need this belt to lift this way because I have back problems.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like we've touched on in the past, I herniated a disc in the past, so I have a herniated disc forever.
Yeah.
Right? The idea here is I don't want to use this belt unless there's going to be a breakdown in my technique without it.
I gotcha.
Okay? So yeah. I want to lift as heavy as I can, bracing my spine the best that I can before I go for this belt.
Gotcha.
Because that's how you get fucking stronger. Mm. You brace your spine. You resist movement when it's really hard to resist movement.
Yeah.
Right? That's what's going to strengthen your core. So a lot of the third option too, which most CrossFitters will go for, or I'm sure you've seen these, the nylon, like soft belts with the Velcro.
That's adorable.
So the reason they'll use that is because it's very easy to loosen and tighten during a workout.
Okay.
There's one workout in my lifetime I've used a belt for. I use that 4-inch leather powerlifting
belt. Does it have a name? Does the
it doesn't, but it was it was an original workout in 2016. It was 3 rounds for a time. You run a quarter mile, so you run 400 meters.
Yeah.
You do 50 GHD sit-ups, you know what that is.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then you do 7 deadlifts at 405.
Come on. Do you know what that is?
Have you heard of a deadlift? No, but 405 is not a light deadlift for most CrossFitters.
Especially after a quarter mile run.
Exactly. A quarter mile run, 50 GHD sit-ups are going to tax your hamstrings on the run, tax your core on those sit-ups, and you're doing that 3 times.
No.
So by that third round, you've ran 3/4 of a mile, you've done 150 sit-ups, and you've already deadlifted 405 14 times.
Yeah.
So by the end of that workout, you're going to be hurt.
Now, when you look down the lanes, a lot of guys adopt a similar strategy. A lot of guys come in with the belt.
A lot of other people, they would wear those Velcro belts. They would just kind of keep it on the whole time.
Yeah.
That's a little harder deadlift for me. I'm 175 pounds soaking wet.
4 wheels is up there.
Yeah. So it's getting pretty high percentage for me, especially for 21 reps.
Yeah.
So I brought out the leather belt. I would just take my time. I'd strap it on before every set.
You need a lever belt.
I've seen them before. Messing
because
around a
that's
little bit.
The only reason people deadlift is to like have that Instagram like fuck.
Oh yeah, just
shoot it drives me insane. I will never own one, regardless of how appealing it seems, just because of that Instagram moment of like bitches, like bam, sets over, just like this dramatic flick of the lever.
No. I'm more about just throwing a bar from over my head for the dramatic finish. But getting back to what I was saying is that that's the only time I've ever used a belt in a CrossFit workout.
Okay.
So typically you're working at sub-maximal loads by a long shot.
Sure.
Right? You're just doing it for larger sets.
Yeah, higher volume, lower intensity.
But yeah, my theory, you know, ideology on this is that in CrossFit workouts, you should not have to wear a belt because you're not working at that high of a percentage. Right? You should be learning to brace your core under those sub-maximal loads.
Because it's the endurance that you need, right? The difference between endurance and strength, I think, is two very different things.
Yeah.
Both of which have similar outcomes when you're lacking and tested under that. Like, if you're tested for endurance and you're lacking endurance, it's different than being tested for strength and lacking strength.
Yeah.
McGill has a great quote. Like, he's the dude, right?
He's
when it comes
dude.
To this stuff. I think he words it in a way where it says, he says proximal rigidity leads to distal athleticism, which the wording I don't really like, and I could be misquoting him, but
yeah,
I'm pretty
sure. Yeah, that's a great quote.
I've
never heard that before.
But I would change it a little bit, and I'm not one to upset a man with such an epic mustache, but I would go as far to say central strength leads to peripheral athleticism, because I think distal and proximal are a measure of superior and inferior, where peripheral and central, I think, I think we're saying the same thing, just coming at it from
a different standpoint.
But
a little different,
and I think that's an underpinning theory to both of how we utilize belts, the idea that you need to be rock solid in the middle,
right?
Or whether that's strength or endurance to be able to display distal athleticism. It's just two different avenues of going about it.
Yeah.
So. You haven't used a belt in any of the open workouts yet?
Absolutely not, no.
Okay.
So you
use it more to build your top end?
Exactly. Okay. I use a belt so that I can move heavier weights without my core rigidity breaking down.
Yeah.
So say I'm going for, and usually my best clean and jerk was without a belt.
Really?
So, yeah. It's more so I'll use a belt in training if I'm doing maybe heavy doubles, heavy triples. Okay. So that, because I know first rep, yeah, I'm probably going to be good. But yeah. Second rep, I think it's like something about like 30% yeah. more perceived exertion on a second rep of
yeah.
a double.
Yeah.
But I know I'm going to break down a little bit, especially when I get to heavier weights. So yeah. I'll use a belt to allow myself to go a little heavier on that set of doubles or triples
sure.
than I normally would without a belt, so that it transfers a little bit better towards, you know, leg strength, positioning, stuff like that yeah. in my one reps.
I gotcha.
So that's a very high-end thing, like I said. In my clean and jerk, I never use it to snatch.
Yeah.
Never. My clean and jerk, above 90%, probably even 95%. Yeah. In my squats, deadlifts, I won't use it till above probably about 75%, yeah. which it seems like a big discrepancy, but you're talking about a large amount of weight.
Sure.
So 75% of, you know, 500-pound deadlift is
yeah, a hell of a lot more.
A lot more weight.
90% of your snatch.
Yeah, then 90% of clean and jerk,
yeah.
which is, you know, closer to 300, 315.
Sure. Yeah.
So you're still handling a lot more weight,
yeah.
and I'll be... You know, by the time I strap on a belt
yeah.
to deadlift, I'm already way above my one rep clean and jerk.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of the purpose there. So for training, about a rough gauge that I like to use is 75% of my squat deadlift,
yeah.
90% my clean and jerk, and then just don't fucking use it in your workouts, yeah. in your Metcons.
Yeah, well, I think that's where we, like, obviously vary because of our intent and what we're doing, where it's like, I have a similar, idea, but a lot of times guys will do full blocks of beltless training.
Mm-hmm.
To sort of, I mean, it's a way of like, all these implements are protecting something and allowing you to overload something else.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
So I think that's sort of an underlying kind of theory that's going to be throughout this entire thing that you guys need to consider is like, when you're using like knee wraps or knee sleeves, you're equating for that variable to being a rate limiter of your movement, right? So it's allowing you to load more through like your upper back, where you can put more weight on your back if you don't got to worry about your knees breaking down in the bottom of a movement. Same thing with a belt. It's like now you can load more of your quads, more of your upper back, because the midsection is yeah. equated for it. So
yeah, you're putting a Band-Aid on the weak link.
Yeah, well, the thing with that is, like, we'll use it two ways, where it's like, or most commonly two ways. We'll do a lot of, like, beltless training blocks.
Yeah.
You know, go 5-6 weeks beltless on squat and that. So it keeps kind of the neural load down because you're not going to be able to go in the higher percentages.
Yeah.
And I think that's to build... I use the word endurance sparingly because I think it's a relative term, right?
Absolutely.
Powerlifter is anything over 6 reps, fucking cardio, man. What is it? So where it's like, no, it's not. Relax. But I think relative to what they're going to get tested on a single rep, it's building a threshold of endurance that's relevant to their sport, mm-hmm. right? So a lot of beltless stuff will be seen in its own training block. But what I like to do is put it in a way where it's, even in my belted training, because the big difference, I think, is that the belt is actually going to change your form, change your technique. It's going to cue you a certain way. Mm-hmm. So it's like you need to learn how to use the belt. Just like when we get into like knee wraps and knee sleeves, like cueing those implements that are bracing you. But in powerlifting, they're bracing you really fucking hard because the weight's so high. I mean, you're literally dealing at 100% or... You know, theoretically, sometimes I mean, it's impossible, but over 100% weights you've never handled before.
Yeah.
So these are meant to keep you as rigid as possible so they can actually change your form, right? So mm-hmm. what I'll do is like, say, years ago when I started using a belt, you know, I wouldn't put 315 on my back without a belt. Oh my God. Like, because I didn't think, I mean, my max was, I don't know, maybe 400 pounds. But as my max went up, so did that point where the belt went on. Right, so now it's like I'm comfortable mid fours, 500 pounds, no belt, no problem, right? Because mm-hmm. I mean, now I'm up around 700 plus. So I think it's as long as both points are moving together, right?
Yes.
Where it's like when your squat is 700, but you're still belting it at 315 and don't feel comfortable unracking a 315 squat without a belt, huge discrepancy, and that's going to lead to potential injury. And the further that discrepancy gets, like when that 7 gets to 8 and onward, it's like you're going from like bench press, people go back and forth on. I use it to cue breathing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of, the way I bench, there's a lot of leg drive in it. So to me, it's just, it ensures, it's more of just a tactile stimulus than anything else. Like, it ensures that I can just feel the transfer of force from my lower body into my upper body. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, in the order of competition, we squat first. So it's like, your low back, if I can take any pressure off my low back after just squatting 600-700 pounds, and then an hour later having to go lay on a bench and keep like a pretty active arch in my lower back, if I can take any of the edge off with a belt in competition, fuck it, I'm taking any edge I can get.
Right.
Some guys will go in beltless, say you don't need it, but that's the thing, like, that's the whole point of this. We could cite research, this, that, and the other, but for us personally, this, in our experience, or in my experience, the belt on a bench press is it makes a difference for me. I mean, you could call it placebo, call it whatever, but if it still means that, like, you know, there's more weight going on that bar because of it, fuck yeah, it's competition, I don't give a shit. Here to win, right?
Absolutely. And that's actually an interesting point that I forgot to touch on, is I will also use a belt to press overhead.
Sure.
But that is more of a cueing stimulus.
Yeah.
It's not that I can't stabilize my spine.
Yeah.
It's to cue me to keep that spine in alignment, because the common tendency is to extend that lower back.
Yeah, get the rib cage
up. Yeah, and kind of turn it into more of an inclined bench press.
Yeah.
Use more pecs, use some stronger muscles, as opposed to staying aligned.
Just dip and rip kind of thing.
Yeah, so higher percentages, of course, but I will use it for overhead pressing.
Okay. So let's go to something a little less contentious and a little more... Shoes. Right? So we've already shit on the barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen people.
You know what? Just to add to it, this was probably about 6 months ago. I was just scrolling through Rogue Fitness, the website.
Oh, yeah. What are they selling now?
What's new?
What's new, Rogue?
Rogue deadlift slippers.
Oh, wow. How
much? They're like $60, but it's like a little leather pair of slippers so that you're not barefoot.
Some federations use that.
Yeah.
But it's like the fact that Rogue, I personally have a different pair of shoes for every lift.
Okay.
Right. And you know what? Let's go one further. I mean, we're talking about gym bag here, but let's talk about footwear in everyday life first.
Oh.
How many people, and this is more of a clinical application, how many people come in, I mean, I've seen like a few marathon runners, some Ironman guys, who are coming in flip-flop. It's like, dude, you're not an athlete for that 150 miles. You're not just an athlete for that 26.1 miles. You're not just an athlete. You're an athlete every day of your goddamn life, right? So it's like, you can't kick off your fucking spikes or your cleats or your chucks or whatever you're lifting in, whatever your go is, and then, you know, slip into a comfy pair of fucking Uggs and then, you know, wonder why you're coming in with so much pain, right? So what do you wear run of a day? Like, what's your go-to? Is that something?
I'm probably not the best example for this, but I just wear my Nikes all day.
But I mean, supportive, but not too supportive, right?
Yeah, like, it's not the worst shoe, not the best shoe.
That's a high heel to be walking around in all day.
4-inch drop. Or, four-inch.
Jesus. Stilettos. You should see the ass on this guy. Unreal. He's actually wearing, like, a pretty nice black cocktail dress right now.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's my kombucha.
Okay, no, three-quarter inch. Three-quarter?
No, that's my lifting quarter. Shoes are three-quarter. These are 4 millimeters.
Four, okay.
So it's right. Almost, it's, you're not going to get a shoe too much lower than that.
Fairly flat. Yeah. All right. Okay, so that, I mean, that's a one thing, just sort of an aside that people need to consider, is like, sure, the footwear in the gym matters because you're loading and then how it changes your mechanics and stuff like that. But as far as, like, that's if you're lucky, and if you're, you know, that's 2 hours a day, 7 days a week, if you're lucky. That's 14 out of 168 hours in a week that you're really focused on what shoes you're wearing, how you're loading your entire body, how the ground forces are being transferred back into you when you have the most load on. But when you're just walking around all day, that's a cumulative repetitive stress that if you're not equating for how the mechanics of your footwear are going to change your gait and then change, hip mechanics, low back, knees, then it's like, dude, you're missing the forest for the trees, right? Like, you can go out and buy the next fucking LeBrons or whatever the hell, but it's like, if you're only going to wear those for 2 hours a day, then maybe take a look at, like, kind of the broader spectrum of what you have on your feet when you're actually walking around all day.
Yeah, if anyone needs to drive this point home, go to Disneyland with my girlfriend.
I'm good. I'm busy
You'll realize real quick you better have some comfy shoes
on. Oh, yeah, you guys clock some miles or what?
Oh, dude, lots of miles.
Oh, shit. Yeah, no, thanks, man. I'm cool. Okay, so what are you rocking on your feet in the gym? Like, You got to have a couple pairs, right?
I have two different pairs of shoes primarily that I'll wear.
Yeah.
I have my lifting shoes, which I wear in Adidas Addy Power.
Okay. That's a smaller. To the Romaleo, it's a smaller.
It's a little less than the Romaleo. Yeah. I believe it's a 3/4 inch.
Okay. I think that's what the Nikes are.
Is it? It's probably pretty close.
Okay. All right.
But they fit my foot really well. Yeah. I like the way they feel.
Yeah.
I've been wearing those, you know, for a while now. I'm pretty used to the stability, the weight distribution in them. I will use those every single time I snatch, every single time I clean and jerk.
Yeah.
Every single time I squat.
Okay.
And that is it. So they're not my CrossFit shoes, they're my weightlifting shoes.
Okay. No CrossFit, so, Metcons?
CrossFit, I wear Nike Metcons.
Okay. Can you compete in CrossFit in anything else? Like, do you... Well, okay, so, that's a douchebag question. Obviously, you can... What is... I mean, Metcons are probably the most popular.
Yeah.
Have you seen anyone else rocking up in, like, low-cut chucks? Like, all right, let's fucking party.
Here and there, you'll see it. But the thing is, Reebok, until maybe this year or next, they have the exclusive right to the CrossFit Games. So those athletes that go to the CrossFit Games... Head to toe, draped in Reebok.
No shit.
Yeah, they cannot wear anything else. So, it was a thing a little while back because these athletes will train all year in, you know, their Nikes, their whatever they're wearing.
Yeah.
And then they'll go to the games at the highest level of competition.
Hey,
and
they
say, you can't wear those shoes you've been training in all year. So that's a little bit of that'll change very soon.
The seedy underbelly of the CrossFit business world is that's an amazing exclusivity to have. They must pay out the nose for that.
Oh, dude. I don't even know if they pay out the nose. I think they just got into it before anyone else got into it.
Gotcha.
And they signed a 10-year contract, which is probably, it's coming to an end this year, next.
I gotcha.
Very soon. But that's...
That's a hell of an IPO. Good for them, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's good for Reebok. Not so much for the athletes.
Yeah.
But, I will use my Nike Metcons for basically everything. I'll train. I run in these. I row. I bike. I jump.
How long will those last you? How long will you
break? Yes, that's another important thing is... These things don't last forever.
Well, I mean...
People buy a pair of CrossFit shoes and they think that they're going to last forever.
No,
they don't. I'm not the best. I try to replace them every... I try to get 3 new pairs a year. So that's every 4 months. And that's actually me stretching it a little bit. So I'd recommend you guys probably replace them every 3 months.
Okay.
But
then again, I mean, your training volume is pretty high compared to most people, right?
Right, so, that's true. I'm probably training 3 times more than the average person.
Yeah.
So
you go Ollies and
Metcons. Okay. And that is it.
I mean, so I'll squat. I have 3 pairs, one for each lift.
Okay.
So I mean, squat Romaleos. I go with a higher heel.
Yeah.
It was a hell of a transition for me squatting from flats and for the longest time squatting like in chucks and then going into the shoes. And I think a lot of people, if you're thinking about making the switch, you need to reevaluate your queuing sequencing for you, because dude, I was on the shelf. I was like sprained SI joint 2-3 months. I couldn't figure it out. What the fuck is going on? Like the feel, like the leverages, but I don't want to say I was NASM squatting, but I was definitely initiating the movement with my hips and not my knees. And just that tilted leverage position, that forward center of gravity, like from the get go, where it just allows you to sort of like implode into your knees. I was sitting back into that and was left with like the super extension moment through the low back and SI.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I was a couple months figuring it out. Like, oh no shit. And I kind of had like should have had a V8 moment where like hit myself on the head. I was like, fucking idiot, man. Like, so that's squatting, deadlift. I recently made the switch to Nike and Flicks, like wrestling shoes.
Oh, okay.
It used to be Chucks, but like the wrestling shoe is so like, there are specific deadlift shoes.
Slippers.
No, like actually deadlift, like real, like you feel like you're getting something for your money.
Yeah.
I think Metal makes one.
Okay.
And I think they're more so for sumo, where they have like a medial wedge. So like, if the idea is you're trying to like spread the floor in a sumo stance, it actually pitches you out onto your hips more.
Okay.
I don't know how I feel about that. I like just something super flat, really like low under the bar.
Yeah.
Like if you're deadlifting with like, I don't know, Sacconis or Asics or something, you're missing the boat a little bit, right? Because think about, I mean,
inch of padding.
Yeah, right. You might as well be pulling off an inch deficit, right?
Yeah. Like, and not to mention, the softer the shoe, the less force transfer you have.
Exactly. Which, I mean, I like the idea of the slippers. I know guys that pull huge weight. They're not pulling huge weight because of the slippers. But if, again, if you can get a fraction of a percent more on 800 or 900 pounds, that's a fuck ton more weight, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, for me, like, being a conventional lifter, like a conventional deadlifter in the sense that my hands are outside my knees when I pull off the floor, I'm not too worried about, I mean, grip is an issue, but when the guys are doing the sumo stance, like, they really need to bite the floor. So that's something a lot of guys will look into. Mm-hmm. There's a dude in Russia who's like, he's the best deadlifter. He's arguably one of the best powerlifters of all time. Okay. His name's Yuri Belkin. I'm confident that he can't understand English, so I'm not too worried about this, but the guy's a fucking savage. Like, anyone who knows powerlifting knows Yuri Belkin. So I saw him at a meet one time, and he's a sumo deadlifter, probably one of the most, like, mechanically efficient deadlifters in the world. 220 pounds, maybe, on a heavy day, and yeah, he's pulling up, like, close to 900 pounds. Like, impressed. But what he did,
fuck,
he asked one of our friends to get a diet dog, or like a dog, he said, like, Coke, like, get me some sort of, you know, cola drink. Fucking pours it on the floor before he goes on the platform and gets it on his shoes because the syrup is, like, sticky, right? Yeah. So just, like, fucking Russians, man. Just, yeah, anything I can do to get an edge. But, like, that's something to consider whether you're going to be pulling sumo or pulling conventional, where, yeah, it's, like, if you're very, like, linear in your loading pattern, it's, like, the force is going straight down. There's not much abduction, external rotation force, so we're not worried about the torque through the floor as, yeah, much. And then bench, a grip makes a huge difference, like, especially if you're a leg drive. So there's basically just two types of benchers, right? There's, like, guys that get, like, the massive arch, their feet behind them. They could be wearing fucking wooden clogs, wouldn't make a difference, right? As long, mm-hmm, as their toes can stay in position. And they're pretty much mechanically wedged in there anyways, so it doesn't make a difference. But guys that kind of flat-footed bench, more like horizontal leg drive to keep their arch, honestly, the best thing I've found, basketball shoes.
Yeah.
Like, a nice pair of J's for me. Like, that'll be kind of like my treat for myself. Like, had a big training cycle. Go buy a pair of Jordans.
All right.
I mean, because they're meant to grip the floor, right? Yeah, so, yeah. Those are my three go-to, like, footwear choices. If I'm doing bicep curls, frankly, don't really care, yeah, kind of thing. But as far as the competition lifts, that's kind of the what and why. Let's switch gears because it's something we can both speak on. Wrist wraps, like wrist supports.
Okay.
Because you were having some wrist issues last week, right? You were doing some front rack, front squatting.
Yeah, it was more elbow. It was, okay, wrist flexors, okay, affecting me, yeah, 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 more proximally, so at the elbow.
Now, how do you utilize, like, wrist supports?
So, in, yes,
training and competition.
This is more so with my weightlifting than CrossFit, because CrossFit, like I said, it's more sub-maximal loads.
Yeah.
Sometimes you will have those one rep maxes, which is, then it, even though it's CrossFit, it's weightlifting, what? It's like a paradox.
Yeah.
But whatever. But I will use wrist wraps a lot of the times, not necessarily because I get wrist pain.
Yeah.
It's more as a preventative measure because I am a chiropractor.
Yeah. See, this is the thing. Go ahead, finish.
And I make a living with my hands, right? So I don't want to catch a clean wrong,
yeah,
and fuck up my wrist and not be able to take patients for the next 3 weeks.
That's an expensive piece of paper I'm looking at.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was sitting next to you for 4 years. That was an expensive piece of paper.
Exactly.
Yeah, that diploma is, yeah, it might as well be a bill.
So, yeah, so that's a huge reason that I'll, yeah, use wrist supports. And I've done it before.
Yeah.
I've done it once, twice. Twice I've hurt a wrist doing CrossFit. Yeah. Once was I failed front squat and my elbow went into my knee, hyperextension injury.
Ooh, that'll do it.
Another one was, I believe it was just a jerk that I caught wrong.
Yeah.
So overhead with a lot of weight.
Yeah.
So for that, I don't really tape my wrist much. I'll, okay, just get like a cloth wrist wrap.
Yeah.
Wrap it up pretty tight and make sure that's pretty secure, yeah, when I'm lifting overhead.
Yeah.
And then that's about it as far as wraps go. I'll use that in CrossFit when I'm doing a lot of barbell work, yeah, typically overhead. Mm. I will not use it for things like handstand walking and handstand push-ups.
Yeah.
I it it decreases my wrist flexibility to the point where my movement's not efficient.
Changes the mechanics.
Yeah, exactly. So I won't use it for that stuff. It's usually just things with a lot of barbell.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I'll actually use it to just keep sweat off of my hands.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. Good old sweat band.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you brought up a good point, and it's something that can kind of rain true to a lot of like the lifting aids, the lifting hardware, where it's the difference between prophylactic and anaphylactic.
What?
Big words, triple word score. So I think about these as like these supports or these braces as, in traditional sense, medication, right? So you can take something prophylactically, which means before a potential onset. If you, allergy season is fast approaching, with the amount of rain we've had, it's going to be a fucking nightmare with these snot-nosed nerds in the Silicon Valley. So, like, people will take Claritin, whatever, prophylactically, before they're having symptoms, knowing that symptoms are more likely to come. If you're lactose intolerant, you can take, you know, so you can take something prior to drain, and then it sort of helps digest and the enzymes, whatever.
Exactly.
And which is how I look at the implements I use. It's like, I'm right there with you where it's like, dude, my livelihood is being able to move. And if I can't move, then I can't make money. And that's, and then the bank comes and seizes my life, essentially. So for me, it's like the idea of prophylactically putting these measures in, belt, straps, wrap, so I don't get hurt because I can't get hurt, totally okay with. Mm-hmm. It's the people who do it anaphylactically. So it's like... I guess anaphylactic could be replaced with reactively.
Yeah.
So it's like the difference between proactive and reactive, where it's like, you know, hey, my knees hurt when I squat, but I put sleeves on, they don't hurt anymore. It's like, no, they still, and because once your knees hurt with the sleeves on, you got a much more, you know, a much more serious problem on your hands.
Yeah.
So I think that's just a good point with the wrist wraps, where it's like, I mean, I use them because, again, it's part of the hardware, it's part of the technique. Knowing that I'm going to work up to a max rep on a bench, where my wrist position is sets the trajectory for that bar, right? So, I mean, I lift with a fair amount of relative, like, extension at the wrist, more so than a lot of people. A lot of these, like, you know, fitness enthusiast, guru, essentially weak people tell you to bench with a straight wrist, right? And it's like, I don't want your fucking advice until, like, and it's... I get it. I get the mechanics behind it. Like, one of the more serious injuries you can sustain at the wrist, which is like a giant pain in the ass, triangular fibrocartilage. You come across these guys
a lot.
All the triangular fibrocartilage injuries. Basically, like, the long and short of the anatomy of it, your radius, the bone of your forearm that goes into your thumb, is they're about the same length, your radius and your ulna, but because your radius starts on your ulna, it actually projects further down distally at your wrist than your ulna does. So where your pinky is, if you follow it all the way down into the wrist, you'll notice almost like a gap, right? Compared to the other side, it's almost like it has like a meniscus, like your knee, like a space saver. That's your triangular fibrocartilage. And that's a real nice place to get hurt under loaded extension. So, I mean, I get the mechanics of it, and that's what we use the wraps, where it's like, if you ever have a powerlifter wrap your wrists or wrap your knees, holy shit, like, it's casted. It's essentially casted. It is made not to move, because if it does move under the weight it's under, you're fucked, right? So, I mean, wrist wraps, I'll use anything heavy, overhead press, any sort of pressing movement, because just the way I grip the bar, I mean, I false grip, suicide grip the bar, which leaves me, you know, reflexively in a lot of extension, because I don't have my thumb wrapped around.
Mm-hmm.
Just helps me cue my elbows, keeps my shoulders in a safer position. A contentious issue in itself. But yeah, that's kind of the long and short of wrist wraps.
Mm-hmm.
It's take it or leave it. I think with this one, especially because of how much of a detriment like that specific injury can be, like, because it's not a muscle. It's not like it's going to heal itself too well, like triangular fibrocartilage stuff. And then scapholunate, if you've come across these, like, dislocations
here and there.
Yeah, it just, wrist injuries are a bitch. Like, your
there's so much going on in the wrist. I tell people, you have what, 8 carpal bones?
It's nine?
Nine?
Is it 8? We should know this. What's the acronym?
Eight. Okay,
alright.
Oh, my bad. So, we got 8. We got, our 2 arm bones, you know, radius, ulna, and then we have our 5 metacarpals.
Yeah.
Insert. So 8, 5, 13, 2,
yeah,
15. There's 15 bones
yeah.
in that area. all those bones articulate with at least one other. Some of them two, some of them three.
And they're so irregular.
Yeah, they're very irregular shaped. And then there's ligaments that crosses every single one of those articulations. Yeah. And then on top of that, you have a ton of fucking muscles that come in that flex, extend, ulnar deviate, radial deviate. And
there's fucking bottleneck right in the tendon.
And it's all right here.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit in your wrist.
Let's not add to it.
Yeah, yeah. Let's not mess up.
So staying on the sort of the vein or through the vein of like wrist itself. Now wrist straps. So wrist supports. Yeah. We were talking about like kind of braces, things you wrap around, Velcro or like the cottony, whatever the fuck those do. I'm not really sure the Olympic lifting ones, but wrist straps are the ones where you're kind of wrapping it around the bar and it's wrapped around your wrist. Helps essentially mitigate wrist or strength. Grip strength as a rate limiter.
Right, yeah. So that's sort of like we talked about. Sometimes people use a belt to kind of take that out of the equation.
Yeah.
I will use wrist straps in my weightlifting training.
Okay.
In positions where either I'm doing a lot of reps or I'm doing a lot of continuous reps from the hang, which means the bar's not touching the floor.
Yeah.
In order to take the grip strength out of it.
Okay.
Because that can be your number one limiting factor. If, say, weightlifters will understand this, or crossfitters will understand this a little bit better than powerlifters, I'm sure. But a snatch, you're taking the bar from somewhere, putting it over your head, catching it in that overhead squat. So if I say, all right, we're going to do triples from above the knee at 80%. So 80%, not super heavy, not light.
Yeah.
Right? By the time you get to that third rep, you don't want to be thinking about, am I losing my hook grip? Is this bar slipping out of my hands? Because then you're not thinking about how you're moving.
Yeah.
Right? So situations like that, I will use straps to take my wrist out of the equation so I can focus on moving my body in a way that's going to translate later down the line to me moving a barbell one time better, right? So I will use straps to attach myself to that bar in training for the snatch.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll do that. My hands are just fucking mangled because I do CrossFit also.
Yeah.
And I don't want to just wrap my hands around the bar and hold on. But I will use it training the snatch. I will use it training clean pulls.
Yeah.
So like we talked about, a variation from the deadlift where you're doing, clean pulls are typically at a higher percent, 100%+ of what you can clean.
Yeah.
And you're doing multiple reps. So if I'm doing 3 to 5 reps at 105 to 110% of clean pulls, I, again, don't want to be focusing on that bar slipping into my fingertips because then I'm not going to be focusing on how I'm using my hips, how I'm using my glutes, my quads, right? So I'm going to use those straps so to take that grip out of the equation so that I can move that bar the same exact way every single time in a way that's going to strengthen me so that one day I can clean that 110% of what I clean now.
Now, how do you go then as solving for the grip strength as a rate limiter?
So, yes. In my opinion, if you're going for a one rep clean or one rep snatch, as a CrossFitter, that shouldn't really be a problem.
Okay, because you guys don't one rep deadlift.
We do one rep
deadlift. Okay, now let's talk about that because, I understand the sub-maximal relative load of the overhead movements versus the deadlift. So, in a true sense of testing of rate limiter being grip strength, they would be the deadlift because that's, put yourself out of the way through your ceiling of maximal weight that you deal with for, the Olympic list. So how do you equate for the deadlift one rep max grip strength dilemma?
Right. That's going to be a little different for everyone. Yeah. My personal take on it is that I don't deadlift with straps so that when I get to that heavy bar, I'm going to be able to pick it up.
Do you find being like a manual therapist, we're using our hands all day, every day. Like, do you find that's helped?
With grip strength? Oh, absolutely. I have extremely strong hands just from digging thumbs into every part of people's bodies.
Yeah, that for me was like a big, if you want, don't train, not don't train like grip strength, just come rub my shoulders.
Yeah.
I feel like for 8 hours a day and then your grip strength will pretty much
so. And on top of that, in CrossFit, grip strength, it is an issue in some things, but I think the amount that we use our hands to hold on to things, pull-ups, toes to bar, muscle-ups, high rep deadlifts in a workout. That to me is more taxing on your grip than ripping one rep off the floor.
Because everything you just mentioned was overhead. how do you factor in, I think this is a really interesting principle that a lot of people overlook, is the idea of like intrinsic inhibition with lack of shoulder stability. Now we're getting pretty like pretty granular, but if you think about it, this is something I explain to a lot of my patients who don't understand like why they're having like shoulder tightness or shoulder pain. Like if you had a dynamometer, a grip strength measure, and you were holding it at your side and squeeze as hard as you can, and that was like your max grip strength reading. And if you took that exact same measure of strength, which is, I mean, if you think about what grip is, right? The intrinsic muscles of your hand, sure, but flexion and maybe some like pronation of the wrist, all of those muscles, like medial epicondyle, the humerus and down. So I challenge him, like, do you think you'd be as strong with your grip strength if I took that dynamometer and I had you go in that overhead position? Do you think you'd get the same reading? And everyone's intuitively, they say no, and I ask why, and they don't know. But they're right. But it's like, if you don't have stable shoulders, you can't. So the quote we did earlier from McGill, right, where we talked about, I mean, I think his was proximal rigidity leading to distal athleticism. Same principle, where it's like, if you don't have that central rigidity or stability, in this case, of the glenohumeral joint, there are people really undervalue or underappreciate the role of the nervous system in motor control, I think. And a lot of this sounds like really jargony bullshit words, but it's like, you know, motor control, movement patterns. What the fuck does that all mean? I mean, if your shoulder's weak, it tells your brain, hey, don't put anything over in an unstable position in the hand, because this fucking thing's gonna break if you do that.
Yeah.
So I think that's an interesting point, where the things you listed and kind of intuitively that play the biggest factor on grip are in the most unstable of shoulder positions, where you guys find yourself more than, I mean, any other sport, like any other athlete, like basketball players, sure, they put their arms up to shoot, but you guys are under hanging load, off of you, and you're on a distraction load. Everything you mentioned was a load pulling the shoulder apart instead of compressing the shoulder down, right? Mm-hmm. So you mentioned grip strength wasn't an issue for the clean, for the deadlift, for even the things that are overhead, but you're almost axially compressing the glenohumeral joint. Everything was like, no, if I relax, then it's just my shoulder capsule keeping it all together. So I think guys who struggle with grip strength and like need to sort of know where relative joint positions are when they're struggling. Because if like, I don't understand, I can grip and rip like a 600-pound deadlift, but I'm failing at 12 chin-ups in my hands. Your shoulder's in a more unstable position, dude. Maybe it's not a grip issue. Maybe it's an ability to express that grip strength in a stable shoulder position. Total aside, total like fucking way off track, but I think something that we need to talk about. So wrist straps, wrist sleeves, shoes, belt. So moving down the chain, knees.
Yeah.
You'd mentioned a couple weeks ago that you know, rarely touch knee sleeves,
mm-hmm.
and you're squatting not only a lot weight, but also like frequency is insane.
Yeah. A lot of volume. Intensity comes and goes. I'll go through cycles where I'm squatting lower volume, lower reps with higher weight.
Yeah.
But even when I'm in a higher intensity cycle, I'm squatting a lot because I do CrossFit.
Yeah.
Right. Whether I'm doing 150.
Because CrossFit.
Yeah. Because
pretty
CrossFit.
Much just the answer.
Yeah. I better knock on some wood here.
Yeah,
I'm
right.
Lucky. I have pretty healthy knees. I take really good care of them.
Yeah.
I take good care of my body. I'm pretty aware of positions I should and shouldn't be in. So I rarely use any knee support while squatting, while lifting. The only time is if I'm having a really hard time getting warmed up or I'm, you know, really sore, I feel extra stiff.
Yeah.
I will wear just neoprene knee sleeves just for the warmth, right? Not because I'm trying to cover up any pain, anything like that, just to help me feel a little more comfortable in my warm up before I squat.
And I think for you too, it's like, knee sleeves automatically are attributed with squatting,
mm-hmm.
but let's throw the movement of the squat out. People get really dogmatic around that, where it's like, let's just think of how much knee flexion extension you go through. So don't think about the front rack, 50-pound dumbbells, each hand, walking lunges. Dude, that's not squatting, but that's knee flexion. It's the same relative stimulus on the joint, and you could even argue maybe more force because now you're landing kind of in an inconsistent position on that lead foot without the stability of like a wider base of support like you have when you're squatting. So it's like you guys, I mean, of all things, like wrists, shoulders, knees take a fucking beating just from like an objective, call it a conscientious objector, like looking into a CrossFit gym, you know, a couple times a week going like, No, thank you. Because it's like, that's what I see first. Because it's not just the squat. It's lunging. It's the jumping. It's the burpees. It's the fucking running. Like, that plays a toll.
So a big reason I see people use knee sleeves is a problem that has not much to do with the knee, which is IT band, right? Which comes from the hip. So people will be like, oh, my IT band hurts. Like, I have that lateral knee pain. Or, you know, whatever it is, it's they're putting a Band-Aid on, but they're putting it on the wrong place. Right? That's like someone stabbed me in the thigh, so I'm going to put a tourniquet around my calf. But
have fun bleeding out.
Exactly. So,
a lot of, do a whole episode just on that, just on like the ITB and we have to do that.
So I won't get too much into that, but a lot of times people are wearing knee sleeves as a way to cover up something that's not the root of the problem.
Just reactively.
What I see in CrossFit. So what about you? I've never even dabbled in knee wraps.
It's like, I see guys who use them recreationally, and it makes me laugh. Like, and I used to be that guy. Like, I had a pair of wraps, and it's like, oh, they're knee wraps. You just wrap them, right? So right now, with like where I'm at in my training, it's like, you know, body weight squats, squat the bar, work up like 200 pounds. Then I'll put sleeves on. Then from there, once I get up, right now, because knee wraps, when wrapped correctly, like in competition, like, there's guys that'll throw them on in a fucking leg press in a 24-hour fitness and have their girlfriend sit up. It's like, all right, I'm glad I saw that. Now I know not to engage with you because you're clearly a douchebag. But it's like, it is fucking painful. It is the most painful part of powerlifting, like classic raw powerlifting, hands down, without a doubt. Because it is, like, especially if you have someone else wrap you. Like, I have my coach wrap me. He's a strong guy. Some would argue one of the strongest guys. And it's the goal, like, really is to make that as rigid as possible, right? Like, you see guys in straps, like in competition, just like penguin waddling their way to the bar. Like, you need to like adjust your rack heights because it's literally hard to bend your knees. And it's when I first started getting like doing classic raw and getting wrapped, I'm like, this is the dumbest thing in the world. It really becomes like, it's very much a technical endeavor. Like, learning how to squat with wraps, proper wraps, is a fucking challenge. Because think, like, they're pushing your hips back, essentially, right? And you want to bring your, keep your hips underneath you, the bar path goes straight. So you need to expend a lot of energy keeping a very efficient bar path. Because if you don't push into the wraps, you're fucked. You're done. You're eating shit every single rep. So it's like, that's one of the reasons I squat so slow, is because it's a constant battle of like using the knee wraps. Cause at the end of the day, it almost just creates like a mechanical bolster behind the back of your knee where you get to the bottom. It's super fucking hard to hit depth in knee wraps, because the entire point of it is it for not to let you bend your knee at all. So now you're trying to like bury ass to grass with these wraps on. It's not for the faint of heart. Like, don't willy-nilly go out and buy a pair of, like, Ace Bandage wraps and start wrapping your knees, because, like, you can really fuck yourself up, because it allows you to load more weight than you can otherwise handle. I don't know a person that can squat more raw or in sleeves that can't squat that in wraps, plus and then some, right? So for me, it's like, it's not something to be sort of haphazardly go into. Like, you need to have like a really strong core, really strong back to be able to handle those loads in the first place. Like, the fact that your knees are your rate limiter is pretty, that means all your ducks are in a row. If like knee flexion extension in the bottom position is where you fail, that's when you know. Like, there's some guys I see and it's like, just unracking the bar with that much weight, they've dropped the bar. So you haven't even begun a descent and the bar's off your back already. Like, falling to the ground. It's like, you clearly don't have the strength or stability to be handling that. So it's not something to be taken lightly. For me, I only use it low bar squatting. Competition low bar squatting. When my stance is at its widest, my hips are the most open, I'm, you know, this is going for it kind of shit. It's just like, yeah, I wrapped in for like a set of 12. Why? Why? Like, clearly you're working at a percentage, you know, less than 70%. You don't need this as an implement. And if you do, then you're utilizing them sort of prophylactically, that Band-Aid, that reactive to pain. and you're missing the boat entirely. So knee wraps, I mean, obviously we're talking about keeping what I keep in my gym bag. Mm-hmm. Knee wraps are something I keep in the gym bag. It's part of the sport. It would be like showing up to the baseball diamond without a fucking bat in classic raw powerlifting. So it's, yeah, not something to be entered lightly. Like, you really need to know that's what you want to do, because you just second guess every decision you've ever made. Like, you can see, like, when my coach is wrapping me, I'm looking down, I'm going like, fuck, maybe if I had like tried harder in school, like, I wouldn't have to do this or something. It's the most painful shit ever. Like, it, like, I have fucking like scars, like, from the wraps. Oh, yeah. And it's like varicose veins and shit. Like, it's fucked.
But so knee wraps are not something to be dabbled in.
No. I mean, it's just different because the axial load of the squat. Like, some people could make the argument that, oh, you know, it would be similar to using straps in a deadlift, right? You're taking your most peripheral rate limiter, accommodating for it, and then allowing you to build a higher ceiling of, like, nervous system activation. Like, all of a sudden, when I put my sleeves on and I squat 550, that's not that bad, because I've had 700 pounds on my back. This idea of, like, postsynaptic action potential, this idea that our nervous system only knows relative loads, not really numbers on a bar, right? So that I don't think is a transferable theory because of how you're loading it. You know, loading a bar on your hands is a lot easier on your spine than loading a bar on your spine, right? So it's just, you know, people I think will try and overreach, like, oh, I'm gonna put some wraps on and so I can, you know, pump up more on my bodybuilding style. It's like, dude, don't fucking, Dexter Jackson's 46 years old. He hasn't squatted in like 2 years or like 20 years. You don't need that. If it's specific to your goal and that's your sport, yeah, dude, strap up, buck up, bite down on something. It's going to suck, but that's what you have to do. But I think if it's not within, you know, your competition, I really don't think it's for everyone. Like, you guys, with how often you come across a heavy back squat and you're not going to be able to build wraps, I think for you it would be more so building strength and endurance. Mm-hmm. Instead of, you know, running the risk of injury, really focusing on that top end strength. But yeah, so let's kind of move a little bit now. I mean, that's the basics, right? Like, that's like sport specific as far as, like, you know, what you're going to see my gym bag and yours for the most part. Mobility, it's called implements.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, to me, like, I've shit on it in the past and, you know, give Rogue a hard time for some of the crap they sell. But it's like, there are some go-tos. There are some, like, you know what, I'm going to have X, Y, and Z because I think they hold some value. They're worth caring. What are your X, Y, and Z as far as, like, mobility implements?
I have 2.5. I don't know if the last one's more of an activation.
Okay.
But the two things I have and actually use in my bag for mobility would be a lacrosse ball. Mm-hmm. Just kind of standard, throw it in the warm up. Yeah. And I also have some floss.
Okay.
Just, you know, the,
yeah,
what is it?
The bike elastic tire, floss. Pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. That's more so just to flush the muscles, get some blood flow.
Yeah.
Depending on A, how sore I am. Yeah. B, what my body's feeling like.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I guess that's the same thing, but what it's feeling like relative to what I have to do.
Yeah.
So, like, that open workout we had this past week, holding on to a pull-up bar for a long period of time. So I'm not saying my forearms were sore, but I had to have really good blood flow in those forearms, in those forearms, just to be able to maintain that throughout. So I'll floss them out before working out like that. And then the last one's just a hip circle, just for glute activation.
Yeah.
You know, again, I used it this past week for the lunges. I'll use it before squatting, even before running, stuff like that. It's just good to get the muscles moving. And that's about it as far as mobility tools for my gym bag.
Yeah. I mean, I go same, lacrosse ball is a must. For me, it's been feet lately.
Yeah.
Feet. Yeah. I mean, I'll poke and prod, like, hip stuff, TFO, glute, bit through the shoulder. But bottom of the feet, just as the weight gets heavy, the ground force is coming back through there. That's literally where I start squat, bench, and dead warm up with. Dude, I'm not wearing shoes right now.
Yeah.
And that to me is like a huge difference. So lacrosse ball, a light band.
Yeah.
So a lot more on, like, I don't want to say the mobility side, but more on the activation side.
Absolutely.
And I really think that's where things need to start moving in this kind of, in the, it's hard to sell, right? Mobility implements are easier to sell than stability implements or, you know, dynamic stability implements. So I think until we figure out a way to sell that, it's going to be, you know, lacrosse. Look at this lacrosse ball. It has a suction cup on it, so I can stick it to things. Or this one sticks to a barbell and this, that, and the other. So it's like, for me, that. So lacrosse ball, light band. What else do I keep in there? Yeah, I keep some, like, use of floss in there. I think that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we have foam rollers at the gym. I'll lean on them now and then, but a lot of just, like, I mean, a lot of my tension issues come from lack of stability, not lack of mobility. So a lot of that is, like, I just deviate my own center of gravity to induce a stimulus of instability rather than a stimulus of resistance, right? I'm not trying to get strong. That's what workouts for.
Yeah, so your gym time is more so focused towards activation and strengthening.
Funny that.
And then do your mobility on your off time.
Yeah, dude. Right? I mean, I'll sit. I have no problem waiting in line at Safeway. Well, I have a problem waiting in line at Safeway because Safeway is an awful place to be.
Fucking terrible.
Yeah, right. I literally had someone, like, there's like baby mama drama going on behind me at Safeway the other day, and this lady was on her phone with like a 12 pack of Modelo and a bottle of Hennessy, and literally the words she said were, "I can only really stand him when he's on meth." And I was like, you know what? I don't even mind spending more money at Whole Foods because I'm paying for this bitch not to be here. Anyways, but yeah, so for me, I have no problems like waiting in line at Safeway and sitting in a full squat.
Yeah. Oh, dude. Yeah, all the time.
I don't give a shit. I'll like put my, you know, get a calf scratch in on the magazine rack of like Teen People and Inquirers. Like I spend the whole day like getting my passive mobility work in. Then it's, you know, dynamic activation stuff. Then on to barbells. Less is more. The one thing, I wrote an article about this forever ago, and I used to it just kind of subject people to written word other than like literally having to listen to me talk and rant about the shit, whereas like the biggest asset you can have in your gym bag is a fucking brain. The ability, I mean, how far ahead do you think you are because you have the ability to assess and implement and like look at the work of it, oh shit, forearms, let's flush them out. Or you know what, tendonitis, forearm flexor issue from thing, let's do X, Y, and Z. Right? So I think having an understanding of like the working mechanics of what you're attempting to quote unquote fix is going to leave you with a lot less to fix moving forward. So not really dose dependent, where some is good, more is better. So kind of getting yourself to like a mental acuity state where it's like you're in tune with your body enough to know what's wrong, but also have that carryover of like, okay, how the fuck do I transiently fix it to get me through this workout, but long term make this not an issue. So let's go like a little bit, I guess, off the grid. Let's call it miscellaneous. Just things like, I mean, for me personally, this might just be a little bit more sports specific. Fat grips.
Okay.
I keep those in the gym bag. Thick bar. Just like neural sort of propagation. Like even stuff that's not really grip loaded, like thick bar pressing. Like we have some axles in the gym and stuff like that, so I don't need them all the time. But
yeah,
you know, chalk. Keep chalk.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just tape for the hands, and I think always we can both speak. What a dumb thing to have to fail a rep on because your hand's ripped open, right? People really like, I mean, my big thing is analyzing for what your real rate limiters are. It's like, if you think your hamstrings are weak on the floor, but your calluses are tearing off your hands 2 weeks before the meet, guess what? It doesn't matter how fucking strong your hamstrings are if you're, you know, if your supple little man paws can't hang onto the fucking bar, right? So it's like, you know, really being proactive as far as keeping my hands in shape, because you guys, I mean, we just have bars that are made of fucking razor wire because the whole point, but you just the repetitive stress of you guys, like, you know, the black steel bars in the middle of San Diego in the summer, like that's gotta fucking tear you apart.
Something I'll do a lot of the time is there's a specific type of tape that I like. It's called goat tape. I don't know if you've heard of it.
No. But please, I'm intrigued.
I mean, it's extremely sticky. It's like pretty much indestructible.
Yeah.
I will use it to tape my thumbs for anything where I'm either on a pull-up bar or moving a barbell. I'll hook grip a barbell, and I guess you would call it a gymnastic hook grip on the pull-up bar, where the thumb is around that bar, so it's a lot of stress right on that that web of the thumb. One, because I don't want to tear my hands, and I don't, like you said, I don't want that to be a rate limiter. Two, because I touch people's faces all the time, and I don't want to bleed on them, and I'm sure they don't want me to bleed on them.
Yeah, I would hope not.
Other than that, some people will use, like, leather grips to protect their hands, which is whatever. I have strong hands, So I'm, you know, I put up a post on my Instagram, not a weak human, because I didn't tear my hands on that last workout. Not necessarily saying you're a weak human if you tear your hands doing toes to bar and muscle ups, but
they have to be trained like anything else, right?
Exactly. Well, it's an awareness thing. People, if they don't have the grip strength, and they keep trying to go, their hands are going to rotate on that bar over and over, and that friction is what's going to cause you to tear. You need to have the awareness and the strength to fucking anchor that hand to the bar so it's not going to move, so you're not going to tear.
Yeah.
So that's a big part of it. So I do I like goat tape. That's the specific kind that I use. And outside that, I have a jump rope. We jump rope in CrossFit.
Weird.
I use an RPM jump rope just because light. It works well for me.
And then I keep double dutch, like you and Tommy go out there.
Oh yeah,
just like you Tommy. Know, you like guys open up the sprinklers. Oh, like
I do have to throw this into this episode. Okay. Quick. Fuck you, Tommy, for getting me sick.
Yeah, you guys gotta stop making out. That was probably part of a wad or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Is he not here today? I didn't see him today.
No, he's in Miami.
Oh, tough break.
Yeah,
here, Genta,
getting tan in the Keys.
Yeah,
doing whatever. Yeah, I don't even want to get into that.
Just having.
Yeah, and last thing, I keep my Compex in my bag.
Okay.
Yeah, here and there. Fucking sore as shit. I need to flush the
turn
muscles.
It up to 10.
Don't feel like getting on a bike.
I got one I'm going to close on, and I think it's the most overlooked. And to me, it's like, how do people, like the people I train, like clients, patients, athletes, this is what I'll start with. A water bottle. What a novel fucking idea.
Yeah.
Right? Hydration and performance, there's not a closer link you're going to find to being able to increase performance, or maybe more so on the other side of the spectrum. Decrease performance with a decrease of hydration, right? So that is the first thing in the gym bag every single time.
Yep,
100%. You know, I'll get halfway to the gym, and if I don't have my fucking weighted dip belt, whatever. If I don't have a water bottle, I'll stop at the gas station. I will get a vessel to hold fluid that I can drink throughout the workout. I have no idea how people fucking go through workouts and not stay hydrated. Or even as a precursor to that, you know, drink water throughout the day.
Yeah,
as you know, just a preventative measure because it's like
thing that you do.
Well, like when I compete in what like 10 days or something like that, and I need to lose some weight. Like I've been wearing this sweater for the past like 3 days because I'm fucking freezing. But I won't sacrifice. Like I'll not eat. Fine, I can eat the day of. I can go. How long can humans go without food?
A lot longer you can go without water.
Exactly. Right. So it's like I can eat the morning of.
Yeah.
And, you know, get enough energy, dude, with these carbs and caffeine.
Carbs
beautiful.
And caffeine.
Fucking
beautiful.
Seeds. Exactly. So, but people are like, oh, you're going to water cut? Like, when are you going to load? It's like, dude, 2 hours. I'm not going to be able to, you know, what are you, 60, 70% of your body's water? If I'm trying to lose 15, 20 pounds of water and then try and put that back within 2 hours, and that's going to be my leading factor of performance going under the bar, fuck that. I'll eat fucking egg whites, you know, twice a day for the next 10 days and just hate everything. But at least if I can stay hydrated, then I know when I kick up the calories in the morning of after weigh-ins, then my performance, I mean, again, knock on wood, isn't going to be as at a detriment as it otherwise would be if I caught water. So I think for me to close off, water bottle in the gym bag every single fucking time.
All right. Like, yeah, I agree with that 100%. Yeah. So how about this? We'll exit today.
Okay.
I want you to pick 3 things.
Okay.
You're going away for a couple weeks. You're going to work out.
I'm going on honeymoon.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
All right. So
first
what,
couple weeks in May.
What are the three things that you would bring with you?
Okay. So in the gym bag regard. All right. That's tough. So, I mean, traveling. I'll literally give the example. I mean, we're going on our honeymoon. We're going to Spain. I'll have just finished 2 competitions. Competing's not on my mind. It'll be more like accessory work.
Mm-hmm.
I'll bring, you know, I'm gonna go through the list. Let's see. I'll bring knee sleeves.
Okay.
Light. I'm gonna be traveling to Spain, so 10 hours, and I'm not, again, not looking to mass pain, but to get the knees a little bit warmer after a long flight like that, I'll bring those. I will bring, probably won't bring my Olympic lifting shoes. I'm okay using my deadlifting shoes to bench with. The grip is there, so I'll bring probably my Nike, my wrestling shoes.
Okay.
And lacrosse ball.
Okay.
Would probably be 3. I'll probably bring the lacrosse ball on the flight. I like to roll out the feet in the plane, sit on the piriformis, stuff like that. So that'd be the 3. Yeah, that's okay. Good. If I was, when I go, I'll stick to that too. I'll like put it up on RX Radio's Instagram when I pack, like, hey, got the Nikes, got this. I'll buy a water bottle in fucking Barcelona. But yeah, that'd be the three I'd go with. Now, all right, let's flip it back. What are you bringing?
Pretty simple for me too. I travel a lot back and forth from here to the East Coast.
PA.
Pennsylvania is where my family is.
Shout out.
I bring three things. Literally, this is all I bring. I bring my Nike Metcons.
Yeah.
So not my lifting shoes, just my regular CrossFit shoes.
Yeah.
I'll bring a roll of goat tape. I'll bring my wrist wraps.
Closing off, I think we should make a disclaimer that this was, I mean, a lot of this is founded in, you know, you can find research in anything, right? Mm-hmm. You can go to www.imright.com and with any confirmation bias, find a research article that supports your opinion. This was our opinion. Our opinion is founded in clinical experience, but also I think we lean more so towards the athleticism side than a lot of practitioners do,
mm-hmm.
because I think we speak to a population that regardless of what we tell them is going to lean towards the athletic population or the athleticism decision. I'm going to win if I do this. Okay. Yeah. I don't fuck what the research says if I have a chance of winning. So I think we speak more to that because I think a lot of practitioners will see what we say as almost irresponsible. And it's like, we're not talking to you. We're not talking to you or your patients. Like how many, I don't see many elderly people. Well, no, that's not true. The elderly people I see are like setting fucking PRs on the weekly. You know what I mean?
That's so legit.
I think this is a disclaimer to sort of, you need to look through your own prism when analyzing. I don't want anyone to go out and buy a pair of Romaleos because they heard that I use Romaleo, or buy a pair of Addy Powers, or buy some goat tape because you said goat tape a few times, where it's like, analyze your needs, what your outcome is. Like everything we have was very specific to
us.
Yeah.
Right. And I'd say even on this episode, we're more so speaking as athletes than healthcare providers. I know we got a little technical on some of this stuff.
That's what we do.
But this is the stuff that we use by our personal preference, our personal experience, what helps us perform the best under the conditions and under, you know, with the bodies that we have, right?
Yeah.
We take a lot of time to self-assess, self-regulate everything that we're doing.
Yeah.
So these are the things that work best for us. You know, if you're busted up somewhere, you're going to have to attend to that first before you buy your goat tape.
I think we need...
From Engine Fitness.
Yeah, right? I think what we need to do, we need to put together like a podcast Olympics. Dude, I think we could fuck up other podcasters. Like if we had some sort of tandem duo, not CrossFit, but like, I think in like both of our field, anyone else who's I will challenge... If there's anyone out there who listens to other fitness podcasts and we want to get fucking we want to get contentious, we want to get squirrely with this, I'll throw down. I think can you think of any other podcast? I mean, I don't listen to many. So basically I know I'm stronger than Tim Ferriss. All right. sorry, bro. He makes a fuck ton of money. But
squat more.
I think between the two of us, if we laid it out there, that would be an interesting call. If anyone out there wants to accept the challenge, and I know you had nothing to do with this, but you're fucking in with
it.
You're dragged into
fuck
it.
Fuck it. I don't turn down a challenge.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see. So, all right. Yeah, we'll fucking finish it off for today. So make sure to check out Engine Fitness, Lumberjack Productions. Five-star rating, review, subscribe. Yeah. Well, you know, we keep an eye on stuff like that. Instagram. Check we got videos coming. We got more in the pipe. So, be sure to follow, subscribe, all that stuff. Until next time.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah.